Welcome to the Edu All-Stars Podcast.
Hey guys, I am Todd Nesloni, Tech Ninja Todd on Twitter. I'd like to welcome you to our 11th episode of Edu All-Stars. Today, our guest of honor is Matt Gomez. Matt is a kindergarten teacher in Dallas, Texas. He's been teaching since 2001 in kindergarten the whole time. He's also the co-founder of EdCamp Dallas and a moderator for the Twitter chat Kinder Chat. And he's married with three boys at home. With me today are my co-hosts.
Stacy Huffine, also known as Tech Ninja Stacy on Twitter.
My name is Chris Kessler. You can find me on Twitter at IamKessler.
And with us today, like I said, Matt, you want to go and introduce yourself with your Twitter handle?
Howdy, I'm Matt. My Twitter is Matt B. Gomez.
Awesome. Well, Matt, we thank you for being here today. You've been on our list since we made our list, so we were excited to finally get around to interviewing you.
Way down on the list.
Hey, you're before some other people that we have, so we threw you in here early.
Oh, she got the money I sent, yeah.
But we always like to start the podcast just kind of getting a little bit of background on how you got into the education field. So what brought you to teaching?
I started when I was 14 babysitting for my church and just found that I really enjoyed working with children, and my mom encouraged me to try to get my first job teaching in some way, and so I was given a job teaching swim lessons actually at a daycare, and I did that for a summer, and they saw that I could work well with kids, and I started working with their after-school program, and from that I just realized it's what I wanted to do forever.
That's awesome. So is there something like so you work with little kids, so you've always worked with little kids. Is there some like person or teacher or influencer that actually wanted, you know, got you into the education field per se?
I would say my mom. She always told me that I was good at working with kids. She always pointed that out to me and kind of fostered that, so I believed it. And, you know, once I got the opportunity to work with young kids, I realized I really did enjoy it. So I'd have to say my mom is the main factor of why I'm, you know, teaching right now.
Is she an educator? Or?
She's not. She's a purchaser for a company. So she just, I don't know, something about, she always, I mean, as long as I can remember, she always said I work good with other kids and encouraged me. When I was in middle school, I worked with special needs kids and helped them as my off period. And she just always encouraged that in me.
Okay. Now, did you always want to do kindergarten or did you consider other ages?
I always wanted to work with primary grades, pre-K through first. I wasn't sure exactly when I went to college, but by the time I got out of college, I was pretty sure I wanted kindergarten.
Let's talk a little bit about your class for a while and what makes, why do you think it's so unique?
Are y'all still able to hear me?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. I would say that it's just that I enjoy being there, and we have a lot of fun. I mean, I really don't think my class is that unique other than I focus on the fun aspect of it and the relationships more than the specifics of what they're learning. So I think that's the only thing that I would say is overall different from my class from a typical kindergarten class.
But don't you have standards to teach? Then shouldn't you be doing that every single day?
You know, we do have standards, but, you know, that's not the focus of my life.
Yay!
Well, I know that in your class, you use a lot of technology. What are some of the ways that you use technology with your kindergarten students?
We use technology just about in every aspect of the classroom, so I wouldn't say there's specific ways that are more important than others, but we use websites, we use technology to connect with other classes and to help the kids create and produce things.
Yeah.
Now, one of the coolest things I think you share is your class actually tweets, and you've had a lot of really neat connections with people that your class has tweeted with, and I know you talk about keeping a giant map on the wall where y'all chart every single group you hear with. Or can you talk a little bit about that and how your class does that?
Yes, we start off with a blank map. It's a 3 foot by 6 foot map with our Twitter handle and us pinned on the map. And then as we make connections with other classes, we add those to our map. And we connect with classes first by postcard exchange. So we kind of start with the snail mail. And then after the first month, we start tweeting and Skyping and Google Hangouts and just about anything we can do to connect with other classes.
I think that's one of the things I heard at first. Hey, there's this guy up in Dallas, and he's got his kindergartners tweeting, and you know, it's like this legend. So it's actually a class account. Is that correct? The kids don't have accounts tweeting. Is that right?
That's correct. And okay. Actually, my goal is not the kids to learn how to tweet.
Right.
It's just a tool that we use. So yeah. People ask me, how do you get past the 13-year-old range and all that? My kids don't ever actually tweet. They provide the content. It is their spot, their voice. But I handle all the logistics of tweeting.
Very cool.
And what is that? What is your class Twitter account name? So for our viewers,
it's Mr. Gomez Class, and we only follow other kindergarten and primary grade classes.
Oh, cool. So what are some neat experiences that have come from having your class connected through that social media avenue?
Well, we've tweeted with weather experts, which was really neat. We tweeted with Pete Delkis and Miss Shade from Channel 5 News and Channel 8 News. And Channel 5 was really cool because they did a live tweet with our class from their actual NBC5 Twitter account. And so we scheduled a time in the morning and did a 15-minute live tweet with them. And the last tweet she sent to us was a picture of her going on the set with a green screen behind her. And so it was really cool just to see them in their actual job. But the thing I think the kids get the most out of tweeting with other classes is they get to see that there's other kids in the world that are real, and they build that digital citizenship in like a real world way. And so something that's happened with us connecting with other classes that I never imagined is empathy. They truly do consider the connections their friends. And when things happen like tsunami in Japan or the hurricane in the East Coast, they want to know about those kids. And I think they're learning to care for other people in the world.
Yeah, that's totally cool. What about you have some unique classroom rules? You wrote a blog post about your classroom rules. I just want you to talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, we have one rule in my class, which is be brave. It's kind of been a process. I started like any other typical teacher started. I had a stoplight behavior chart and a set of 15 rules of do not, do not, do not. And over time and just going to different conferences, I've kind of evolved into not limiting myself as a teacher with rules. And so it's kind of given me the freedom. The one thing I want the kids to do is be brave in their learning, and everything we do kind of jumps off of that. So what we have in my room is expectations. Most kindergarten kids know that they're not supposed to hit other kids. I don't need a rule saying don't hit. So when it happens, I just am able to handle those things individually with each child. And like I said, it gives me the freedom to kind of meet the kids' needs.
I think you mentioned in there something about control. You have these rules, and the kids look at that and perceive that as you're trying to control them, and that's not the way you want to set off the first day of school,
That's correct. I mean, self-regulation is a very important thing for kids in general, especially for young kids. And I think when the teacher takes too much control, they're not giving the kids chances to self-regulate and to practice it. I mean, they have to fail at self-regulation and be given that opportunity to be able to grow and learn how to do it. So if we're controlling everything they're doing with rewards and color charts and rules, then it makes it really hard for them to figure out how to do it on their own.
Yeah. Well, and I love that's the expectation for your kids already in kindergarten, in that just I love the only thing that they have is be brave. Because I know sometimes like with us, Chris and I being more secondary-based teachers, we get kids that are afraid to take risks and are afraid to try things because they've been hindered by rules all the time. And so I love that you're already starting that in a kindergarten classroom.
Yeah, that post actually inspired me to kind of just I had pared them down as the years go by, but I had 5 last year, and I did one rule this year, and it's just 100% effort. And I kind of shared that with some people on my campus today, and this is a brand new teacher, and I told him that, and he just kind of like looked mortified that I was only going with that. But I explained the reasons behind it and everything, and I think that's and he may be doing the same thing also, so pretty cool.
Yeah, I think every, you know, the Be Brave works for me. It works really well for young kids because it kind of inspires them. Even there was a couple times last year where we get into situations with bullying and, you know, be brave for the person that's being bullied and be brave for the people around. So it works, seems to work in everything we do, but I think any teacher can find kind of a motto that works for them like you did and mm-hmm. what works for your class and go with it. You know, the other thing I like about the brave aspect is it's a female, you know, hero. And I think that's important that the kids see that at a young age, that the girls can be the hero.
Yeah.
So are you going to be incorporating the movie Brave a lot with what you're going to be doing this year?
No, not really. I have the logos on their name tags and just a couple of fun things where there's a couple of Brave themes in my room, but, you know, I'm not going to pull clips and do all that part. And it's just kind of the motto in general.
Yeah. This kind of goes back to Twitter, and you know, we know your class is on Twitter, but you have a very large following on Twitter as well. How did that journey kind of begin for you?
I don't know how it really got to where it's at, but it all started with one of my good friends who tweets Wild Hair Media. He's a social media expert, and he's one of my good friends, and he talked to me about being on Twitter, and so I just wanted to do something he was doing as a friend, and I love technology, so I tried Twitter out, ditched it for a year. We ended up going to summer camp together, and I spent a full week with him, and he was tweeting and doing his job, and I said, well, explain to me again what this Twitter is, and he's like, you need to find your people, so he showed me how to search. And somehow I found the kindergarten group, Kinder Chat, with Heidi and Amy and a couple others, and they were starting the very first Kinder Chat that next month. And from that very first chat, I kind of understood what it was about finding your people online and inspiring them. And then just all the ed camps that I've gone to has really kind of grown my network personally.
That's kind of the same story that we keep hearing. People get on, they're not really sure what it's about, so they kind of ditch it for a while,
right.
And then they get back into it when they actually really learn how to use it for, you know, professional development, really.
I think it's all about helping the newbies find people. They need, if you can't find people to start with, and so giving them that base of 20 or 30 people to follow and then letting them grow from that is really important.
And the chats.
Right. And see, the chats weren't, I mean, Kinder Chat was one of the first grade level chats, and there weren't many other than Ed Chat going on at that time when I started. So now you can just find your little group, and, you know, as my friend Amy says, Happy Camper Girl, you got to find your people. And once you do that, Twitter's just, you know, becomes invaluable.
Mm-hmm. Now, what's the biggest benefit you've received from being on Twitter?
I would say the biggest benefit is me being willing to share what I'm doing. My blog is a result of Twitter and people encouraging me to share my ideas and what I was doing. And from that, I've become a much more reflective educator. You know, my blog, I tell people all the time, it's really not for other people, it's for me. I get home, I think about what I've done during the day, and there's a couple things on there that I do just to share. But for the most part, it's me kind of reflecting what I'm doing, rethinking how I'm organizing things tech-wise or, you know, otherwise. And so that's probably been the biggest thing, is I have a space to reflect, and I never had that before.
Now, you mentioned Kinder Chat, and I know now you're a co-moderator for Kinder Chat. How did that come about?
Well, it grew so much that Heidi and Amy were looking for, and Heidi and Amy are the founders of Kinder Chat. They were looking for helpers, and we were at iTeachK in Vegas 2 years ago, and we're discussing how to make it more collaborative and how to help them out with all they were doing. And they decided to break up our topics into six categories, and each category has assigned a moderator. So I moderated the tech piece last year for Kinder Chat, and they're supposed to announce who's going to be moderating again this year for the upcoming category. So it's just about kind of spreading the wealth for the people that are in their chat the most often.
And who are the other people that started that with you? What are their Twitter handles?
Heidi is Echernat, and Amy Murray is Happy Camper Girl. So I guess we'll have to. I'll tweet those out later.
Yeah. And when does a Kinder Chat take place?
It is Mondays at 8 p.m. Central.
Or and it's every Monday?
Every Monday. We just this last Monday was our first one after summer break, and it's every Monday except for you know, like winter break and a spring break, we have a break, but right. Every Monday, 8 o'clock.
So I know that you you met Todd and Stacy last year at EdCamp Dallas, and you're actually one of the co-founders of EdCamp Dallas and still organize that. So talk to us a little about EdCamp Dallas, how that got started, where that's going, what we got going on here coming up in the fall, that, those kinds of things.
Okay, well, it's kind of a long story. Me and one of my assistant principals at my school, Matthew Aaron, he's at Matthew_Aaron. We were some of the first tweeters in our area and for our school district. And we were online, you know, following EdChat or something, and people were talking about EdCamp. And we tweeted out, when is an EdCamp going to come to Dallas? Because we had no clue even what it was. And I think it was Dan Callahan who tweeted us back, said, well, if you build it, they will come. And so, you know, the next week he's like, we should do this. And we had no clue what we were doing. And we just decided to start EdCamp Dallas. And I actually went to EdCamp Omaha. So I'll give a shout out to Omaha. I went to EdCamp Omaha right before the first EdCamp Dallas just to get an idea of what it really was in person. And so that's kind of our EdCamp tree lineage is through EdCamp Omaha. And I've been there three times. Josh Allen is the main organizer there. He's amazing. And from that, we co-organized Dallas. We had right under 100 people the first time at EdCamp Plano. And then the second year, we had around 240. And then this year, we have sold out. So it's been fun watching it grow.
Like sold out in a couple days, right?
12 like, days, 400 12 days.
God, that is crazy.
And we have 50 people on the wait list right now.
For those people that don't know what EdCamp is, what how would you explain what it is?
EdCamp is a participant-driven conference. So when you arrive, there are no preset presentations or preset agenda for the day. The participants get together and decide what they want to present about and what they want to share about and what they want to learn about. And then the organizers put together sessions based on those needs, and the people that are there participating decide if they want to facilitate those different sessions. And that's one of the underlying things of EdCamp is that you facilitate a session, you don't present on it. But, you know, there are some things where it's kind of hard. If, for example, Twitter is always one that ends up being a session at EdCamp. So people get on Twitter for the first time. Well, it's hard for people to collaborate about Twitter if they've never been on it before. So someone kind of has to lead that session. And so, but overall, the goal is that it's a discussion among the participants. That they're, you know, the theory is that people talking are the ones doing the learning. So EdCamp is designed to get everyone talking and everyone sharing what they're doing.
Also, you're a blogger. Have you always been a writer?
I have never been a writer. I hate writing.
Really?
Yes.
That's me.
I despise writing. So, and if you go to my blogs, you'll see that they're not, you know, they're not written like a writer. I'm more like someone who is just describing what I do, and I don't use big words. And there's a lot of vocabulary errors on my blog. But again, it's just a space for me to kind of get out what I'm thinking and what I'm doing in my classroom. But I really hate writing, but I love blogging.
Now, why would you encourage other educators to blog, or would you encourage other educators to blog?
Definitely would encourage everyone to blog, and the main reason is everyone has a voice to share. My blog isn't anything special than anything anyone else is doing in their classroom. I'm just one of the few primary educators that's sharing what I'm doing. And so everyone has a voice. Everyone's an expert in their own classroom, and we can all learn from what you're doing. You just have to, you know, the same thing for teachers. You have to be brave and take that step. When I first posted my blogs, I thought nobody would read it but my mom and a couple of my friends. But it builds, and there are people out there that want to know what you're doing, and any teacher that's brave enough to share, I think you'll be surprised how many people are willing to give you feedback. I get so much feedback from the comments and the shares and people tweeting about my blog posts that I get much more out of it than I ever put into it.
I was just going to say, you probably get more, you learn more from posting than if you had just kept it to yourself.
I do. I really do. And so, it, you know, in the end, it saves me time because I learn, someone will post, have you thought of this, or have you seen this tool, or I do the same thing, but I do it this way. And so those comments and that sharing really helps. And you know, I really enjoy people who push back on what I'm doing and what I'm thinking. And those are the comments that make me grow the most. So either I have to decide why I disagree with them and really think through that, or I have to kind of think about their point of view.
Well, you know, that leads us perfectly into the next question.
Or was Chris going to say something?
Is that what you're talking about?
Well, no, I was going to talk about the post that he wrote recently.
Yeah. So back in session 7 or episode 7, I think we were with Aaron Klein maybe at that time. Was that right?
I think so.
Session 7, I had promised that I was going to write a post about how to get a blog set up. And I went ahead and did that last week. I finally got around to doing it after several weeks of putting it off. But if you go to ckessler.com, that's KESLER1S, you'll find that and how to set up your own domain, how to set up a WordPress blog, and get started doing that. And I challenge everyone to go out there and do that this year. You know, school's starting right now. This is a great time. I've kind of reinvigorated myself. I dropped off a little bit last semester because I just didn't feel like I don't know, for whatever reason, I didn't feel like people were reading it or whatever, but it's not about that. It's really about just reflecting your own thoughts, like everyone said, you know, here tonight and even prior podcasts. So I challenge everyone to do that, and if you want to see the directions to do that, you can go to ckessler.com.
Oh, you're genius.
Yeah, real quickly about the blog posting, I get asked about that a lot. What's helped me the most is I take a lot of pictures during the day, and then when I get home in the evening, I just flip through my camera roll, and those pictures usually spark some kind of thing that I want to talk about or think about or share. So I found that that's a really easy way to kind of look back through the day, is just take pictures and go back through those.
And talking about not controversial, but, you know, posting your opinions and then having to either defend them or you know, hear how other people feel, you recently had a post about teachers pay teachers. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yes. Yeah, that was kind of – it's been an interesting adventure with that post. So,
Are you still getting comments on it?
I am. I still get one or two comments a day. So, if you Google teachers pay teachers, my post is the second thing that comes up now. So I'm still getting a lot of traffic.
After the site itself.
That's unbelievable. That's really cool.
Yeah, it's taken on a life of its own. So last August, as we were preparing for the school year, I started hearing a lot about teachers pay teachers. And so I told my team I was going to post why I didn't like teachers pay teachers, my issues with it. Not why I wanted to take it down or why it was bad for teachers to use it, but just why I tended to stay away from it. And so over really a full year, I kind of went through, even though it's a short post and there's just 4 points, it's really hard to say those without, you know, hurting people's feelings and attacking, because it's hard to challenge people's thinking without them feeling attacked. And really one of my biggest points was that I didn't feel the culture of teachers pay teachers allowed for people to give constructive feedback, constructive criticism. And what I've kind of found is the way the post was taken and the way it's taken off kind of proves that point or supports that people aren't as supportive of that constructive criticism. And I think they're changing. And, you know, one thing I've learned about the teachers pay teachers people is they are amazing people. I mean, I've met a lot of them. I've had phone conversations with some of them, and they're amazing teachers doing amazing things. But, you know, one of my main feedback was is they're developing stuff for their classroom, and then other people are just using it, you know, in their classroom. And I don't want new teachers to feel that that's the best way to do things. And so that was kind of one of my main points.
Yeah, for those people that don't know what Teachers Pay Teachers is, it's a site for teachers to go on. They can put up their content, their lesson plans, you know, content they created, and then other teachers can download that, sometimes for free, sometimes for a cost. Teachers Pay Teachers takes a little commission off of that. And
a very small commission, really. I mean,
yeah, it's a small commission. And
they treat their teachers very well.
Yeah.
And then, well, and you were, that post was so popular, you had to write a second part, right?
That's correct. I got so much, you know, negative feedback of where this coming from that I just kind of laid out, this is me and this is where that post comes from, that I do things differently in my room, and I do reinvent the wheel as much as I can every year, and my goal is to really meet my kids' needs and not go for, you know, stuff that's already done. And that's kind of my way of doing things. But, you know, one of the main pushbacks I got was about money. And I never mentioned the money in my post. And if you look through the comments, there's quite a few where teachers are you know, hammering me about teachers should be allowed to make money off what they're doing. And I never brought it up. I never commented on it. And so that was, you know, it was unfortunate as far as I was concerned that people weren't focusing on my points.
Was there anything that surprised you about some of the comments that you saw? Like things you weren't expecting, or just did you think that people just misunderstood some of the post? Or?
I think the biggest thing that surprised me is how many teachers commented about their room. They're in their room for 35 weeks of the year, that it should be a place that they want to go to. And I get that, but my room isn't for me. And so that comment just, you know, those comments didn't do anything for me, because I really don't care what the room looks like for me, because it's about the 22 bodies sitting in there. And so I think our focus should be on what we're doing in the classroom should always be on the children. And it doesn't mean you can't be a teacher. Of course, you go in my room, there's Aggie stuff. It's my personality, but it's all about balance. And I think a lot of the teachers that were commenting on there probably have that balance, because they're online, they're already doing some of those things. But, you know, I wanted to question those people that didn't have the balance.
Chris, did you have a question?
Yeah, no, I was going to talk about, no, that's fine. He answered what I was going to talk about, so.
Well, you mentioned taking a lot of pictures throughout the day, and I know before that you've talked about how you have a Facebook group that you use with your parents. Do you still do that?
I do not. I'm not allowed to have a Facebook group anymore. That was 2 years ago, but I do have a classroom blog now, which has taken the place of the Facebook page.
Was there an incident that happened? I mean, you don't have to talk about that, but I mean, was there something that happened and that's why it got taken down, or was it just the school district didn't receive it well?
Yeah, they just weren't ready. I mean,
they weren't ready for it.
My district has been very supportive of me, and you know, when I first started doing all this, there wasn't as much support there. And what I learned is it was my fault, because I talk about relationships all the time, and I understood them, that between the kids and me and the parents and me, but what I really didn't see, the big picture of that, it's important to build relationships with the administrators and all the people making decisions, and so I hadn't done that yet. And so since I've done that the last 2 years, they've been incredibly supportive of me and what I'm trying to do in the classroom. But the Facebook thing, what ended up happening is it was so popular, the parents loved it so much, that everyone else on the team wanted to do it also. And the only way we could do that is to get real approval from the district, and they just weren't ready to support that at that time. Yeah. And so, and it was just a logistics. I mean, we have a large school district. You know, if we had just four schools, it might be something different, but we have 48 elementary schools. And so allowing stuff like that to happen, there's a process there. And like I said, I've started to understand more of the big picture of that, and that, you know, I still push boundaries, and I still think it's my job to kind of do what's best for my kids, but at the same time, I'm seeing more of the big picture of what's there and what decisions those people have to make, you know, in the upper level admin. So, but I do have a classroom blog now, and one thing I'll say is it doesn't matter what tool you use. What matters is the content. So it doesn't matter if you use Facebook or email or, you know, Remind 101 or whatever you're doing to connect with parents. If the content is there and the kids, it's the kids' voice, they're the ones that drive the traffic for the parents.
So let's switch gears for a second here. And do you have a moment in your career that maybe you'll never forget? Maybe it's a student that you had. Maybe it's something that happened, you know, in your educational career along the way that just really kind of either emotionally impacted you or just kind of sticks with you still.
I say that the moments that impact me the most with being kindergarten, one of my favorite things about kindergarten is kids learning to read. And so there's three or four kids that struggled beyond belief to get that aspect done. And then when they just really figured out they were readers and were able to read on their own, that those moments really stand out in my mind more than anything, because that's powerful for them to be able to, you know, read what's there and learn on their own. So that's one of my favorite parts about kindergarten is, you know, is watching them grow with their reading.
Yeah, I have those same moments in eighth grade when they learn to read too. And it's like, I joke about that. I totally joke. But I had to say it.
I understand.
Well, we always ask the next question. Failure is a huge piece of the learning puzzle for everybody. Can you think of a time maybe that you experienced failure and you took it and you really learned from it?
I knew you were going to ask this, and I told myself I was going to be prepared, and I forgot. So my biggest failure is not being prepared for this question.
There you go.
I think as a teacher, my biggest failure was believing that behavior charts and rewards were kind of the way to go. And you know, when I started, even though I was always been kind of a fun kindergarten teacher, I kind of believe that, you know, don't smile till Thanksgiving thing, that you kind of had to set the tone and do all these things. And it took me a while to realize that how important the relationships were and that really is a key to success. So I would say personally, I think my biggest failure is, you know, when I opened the school I'm at currently, I was a team leader there, and I implemented a behavior system with five different colors and all this stuff, and I was so proud of it. And looking back, it was probably one of the worst things I ever did, because it caused stress with the kids, it caused stress with parents, and it made it easier on me as a teacher. And that's what behavior systems do, is they work for teachers, but it wasn't working for the people that I needed it to work for, which is, you know, the kids.
Well, the last question that I have for you, it's kind of a two-part question. So the first part is, what advice would you give to a teacher that's just getting started, that's just preparing to begin their first year?
Wow. You know, being a tech person, I would say to get connected and to find that group of teachers that are going to support you in all the questions that you're going to have. You know, we all benefit from that amazing teacher next door, but now you're able to have that amazing teacher next door all over the world. And so I think getting connected and finding a group of people that can support you in your endeavor in the new year. And then the other thing I'd say is, as a new teacher, is do a few things really, really well instead of trying to do everything and mediocre. And that was one thing I was told my first year, and you know, I didn't even teach some of the curriculum I should have taught, but I focused on things that I was comfortable with, and I think I had a better year because I didn't spread myself thin in what I was doing.
Now, you've also been teaching about 12 or 13 years now, so I guess we could consider you an experienced teacher as well. So is there any advice that you would give to other experienced teachers beginning this new school year?
Don't ever stop changing. You know, I think the fear of change is detrimental to classrooms. And so, you know, one of the things with my Teachers Pay Teachers, I talked about the laminating culture. And I encourage teachers not to do things just because they have it laminated for the last 3 years. And to really think through every year and look at every year as a new year and a new beginning, because the kids in your classroom are different.
Yeah, Jeremy McDonald kind of talked a little bit about that when he was on, I guess, a few weeks back now. You know, he said that law of diminishing returns, like things that worked yesterday aren't going to work today, and worked last year aren't going to work this year. And it's, yeah, I think that's a very good point.
Yeah, he's a lot smarter than me because he's using, you know, those big economic terms. So
it's the same principle, right?
Right. I say lambda culture. He says law of diminishing returns, utility, whatever.
Well, Matt, thanks for coming on and really sharing your story and your experiences in your classroom. And it's just, you know, we know you kind of on a personal level too, and it's really good to get to talk to you like that. So yes. If you want to please share your contact information with anyone listening, that'd be great. Blogs and Twitter and all that.
Well, really, just mattbgomez.com. If you go there, all of my social networks are there in the top right corner. Email, every way that you can contact me. So that's kind of the hub of everything. Maybe the easiest thing to do is just go to that site.
Awesome. Cool. What do you got next? Ooh, I guess I'm doing this too. I always mess this part up, I think. So let me tell you a couple ways that you can connect with us. We're on Twitter at EduAllStarsHQ, and we tweet under the hashtag EduAllStars. Our blog is at eduallstars.com. And then if you search out iTunes, you search out EduAllStars there, you can find all the previous podcasts we've done with all the other great guests that we've had.
And we've got a lot of really great guests coming up. And over the next couple months, we've got some pretty awesome names and some people that we're excited to talk to. We've got Todd Whitaker coming up soon. We've got Steve Spangler, the science guy. This Sunday, we are going to be having our next interview. It'll be at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, and it's going to be with Jack Andreka. 16 years old, and has essentially found a cure for pancreatic cancer. And he is also being honored by the White House this year. And so we're excited to talk to him in some ways that he's encouraging kids in education. And so that'll be this Sunday at 7 p.m. if y'all want to check it out.
And we always encourage people to subscribe to our iTunes and leave ratings and feedback. That really helps with our rankings and gets us visible and out to more people.
Cool. And you know what
Thank
to do.
Thank you all so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for coming on, Matt.
Appreciate it.